Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The main thing that I think with this environment is that you don't want guys sitting around a visiting clubhouse all day. You know, a lot of guys, we've had buses since 1 o'clock coming here. And so I just don't want my players sitting in a and indoors and, you know, with all that we're dealing with right now, it just makes a lot of sense to, the sooner we can make a decision on if we think we can play the game or not, the better. I think MLB's on board with that as well. We're trying to limit just the indoor time.
That's David Ross, and that's smart. Wouldn't it be nice if in their 113 pages, MLB had some kind of policy or some kind of thought about that? Because people together in a room, that's how people are catching COVID. Density of population, amount of time spent in recirculated air, that's how you're getting the viral load. That's what you need to avoid. And baseball's kind of like, oh, well, okay, yeah, I guess we'll figure it out. I mean, if it takes a tweet from Anthony Rizzo to make that work, more power to it. But there's big picture MLB stuff to talk about and baseball to talk about with Joe Sheehan, who is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. He of Sports Illustrated. And I always mention, too, if you're not receiving the Joe Sheehan newsletter, you're really missing out. I mean, you can read his work at Baseball America and SI, but the good stuff is in the subscription newsletter that is absolutely well worth your time and money and attention. And he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, Melrose Park. How are you hanging in, Joe?
Got that. My editors at SINBA will be happy to know that the good stuff is in the newsletter.
Well, I mean, you're afforded more space and as many characters as you like, as many words as you like. So I appreciate it that way. When you're your own editor, that's what why I consider it the good stuff. Anyway, what's baseball doing now? Where are we here? And with more postponements today, and certainly more to come. And as we sort of amateur contact trace this is not pretty.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how the Cardinals ended up in a strip club in Atlanta, because I was told that would be the only way.
You know, Joe, we're having a little problem with your connection here. I think we're going to try to get a connection reestablished here because it seems a little bit distant there on the way we have it set up right now. So we're going to try to get Joe hooked up and reconnected, and we will do that. And here, I think we've got Joe back on the line. All right, so you were saying.
Yeah, Dan. Like I say, after the Marlins incident, there was all this blaming the Marlins fest. So I'm trying to figure out how the Cardinals ended up in a strip club in Atlanta, because that's apparently the only way you can catch the virus. I think we're learning that the problem isn't, and I've said this all along, the problem isn't baseball players and their behavior. It's trying to do this in the United States of America in the summer of 2020. The background spread of the virus is going to make it very hard to send 900 baseball players flying around the country for 3 months without having this happen. So, you know, we'll see if this spreads with the Cardinals. You know, the Cardinals, of course, played the Twins this week. The Twins are playing the Indians. All of this gets complicated in a hurry. As I said the other day, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, I don't think baseball should be pulling this off. I think the risk, not just to the players, but to everybody the players come in contact with, is too great for the benefit that they're getting. So they seem like they're going to muddle through. It certainly seems to me at this point, Dan, that MLB has made up its mind that short of literally a half dozen teams being wiped out or something truly tragic happening, that they're going to find a way to get to the playoffs.
And we keep thinking about how what we don't see. And what we don't see is an asymptomatic player who came down with it because of travel. And like when I say amateur contact tracing, too, I'm also thinking frighteningly of we don't know who got it from whom, who got it from whom, who got it from whom, and how many people might somewhere end up dead because baseball is deciding to do what it's doing. But it's not an insignificant number, and it's not theoretical, because the testing lags are such that we're not able to really know who's getting it from whom and how far it's spreading. And I know we want our baseball, and I'm watching it, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm glad baseball's back, but I still kind of feel bad.
That's where I'm at. Last weekend, I really kind of threw myself into it, and I forgot how much I missed the game. Watching basically baseball for three straight days and go back three and a half, go back to Thursday night, it was nice. And then, of course, you wake up Monday morning. We knew on Sunday that the Marlins had some positive tests. You find out Monday morning it's a breakout, and like, oh, wait, that's right. That's a reminder of what we're trying to do here. And this is one of the arguments I made when we were deciding whether to play or not. Everybody wants to say, oh, we'll get baseball back and things will be normal. And it was never going to be normal. It was going to be this. And it was like this in July. I mean, throughout July, every day we'd hear about some positive test and some player, or, some player is not available today, but the manager isn't going to say why, because we're treating this differently. So it's not the, blissful, fun trip back into our normal lives. It's kind of just another reminder that we're living through a pandemic. I'm like you. I'm thinking less of the players, and I don't mean to say that I'm not thinking of the players, but the players have made the choice to play, or they've opted out, and they are very well compensated for that choice. I'm concerned with, there was a Philadelphia clubhouse guy, a visiting clubhouse guy, who doesn't make $500,000 a year minimum. It's people like that. It's a bus driver. It's a flight attendant on a plane. It's somebody who delivers meals. It's all of the people that are being exposed to increased risk who aren't necessarily as well compensated for that risk.
Meanwhile, there's been some pitching performances. It seems like every morning I wake up and there's been somebody who's dealing. Shane Bieber has been insane through two games. I was watching Sonny Gray look tremendous. We saw Kyle Hendricks in his first outing was great. Lucas Giolito was good. Max Fried putting up numbers. It does seem that even though we were thinking of a time when maybe starting pitching is going to matter less and less, there have been some guys just throwing it.
Well, yeah, the top end of starting pitching was never going to go away. You talk about the use of openers or tandem guys, pulling guys after two times around the order. But the top end is still ace-like. We saw, like I said, opening night, Kyle Hendricks. In a moment where we didn't think anybody was going to go seven innings, eight innings, much less a complete game, Kyle Hendricks goes out and nearly throws a Maddux, throws a 103-pitch shutout. Is fantastic. And you mentioned some of the other starts. Bieber last night, I don't know how much of that you got to see. I saw a bunch of it. And you talk about a guy not with, Bieber has B-plus stuff, A-minus stuff. He doesn't have that overwhelming Scherzer, Verlander type of stuff. But you talk about a guy who, like Hendricks, has that exceptional command and control. And it just really was a pleasure to watch him carve up the Twins last night. The top end of starting pitching does seem to be ahead of the hitters. If you look at the league right now, the league's hitting .230. It's got the highest strikeout rate in baseball history. It's got the lowest batting average on balls in play since 1992. So, I mean, I thought coming in the pitchers would be ahead of hitters just because it's easier to train as a pitcher without games. I mean, hitting, you can do all the sim games and exhibition games you want. It's not quite the same. Whereas a pitcher throwing in a bullpen, pitcher throwing in that type of environment, can work on his stuff more easily.
I was looking at some of the StatCast numbers for White Sox rookie outfielder Luis Robert. And any way you want to do this, if you want to do the eye test when he's running over to straightaway right field to stand in front of Larry Garcia and make a routine play, despite the fact that, he was the center fielder, and the home run numbers, the launch angle, the exit velocities, the one that really just jumped off the page to me, sprint speed of 30.1 feet per second. So this is a guy with the body of a Greek god who runs like Billy Hamilton.
And I think the fun part about Robert is that they've given him the job, and he doesn't have to hit. There's a Byron Buxton thing here, like where if he were to be a disappointing hitter, say he has the year Jimenez had last year, hit 240, hits a bunch of homers, doesn't do a whole lot else, he's going to be a plus center fielder, so that you could just live with that. The Kelly Leak stuff in the outfield's kind of fun to watch. But, I mean, just a tremendous, tremendous athlete. For all this concern about, oh, baseball's not getting the best athletes anymore, Luis Robert, who, certainly at Cuba, not an American youth, but still, to watch him play is a ton of fun. He's certainly been one of the highlights of the early going here. And, one of the reasons you can kind of forget about everything is going on is because you get to watch a Luis Robert every night.
And people are bickering about Ricky Renteria's lineups and where Robert is batting. And I was talking with Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Perspectives just a couple days ago, and we're all in the wilderness when it comes to analyzing this. And essentially, you've made the point where we can't even really try, and we just have to sit back and watch it, and whatever it is, it is. But I've never been a lineupista, and we know the numbers on how lineups matter or not. But when each game counts for the equivalent of 2.7, and you got a finite number of at-bats to get these guys, I kind of think, I'd like to see Nicky Delmonico not bat fourth. I'd like to see Luis Robert higher in the order.
Yeah, that's happened twice. I guess once, actually. Looks like Encarnacion hit the cleanup one of the days. I don't know. You look at the six guys ahead of him most days. I mean, should you hit him ahead of Eloy? Maybe. I don't think I want to hit him ahead of Grandal because Grandal's got all that OBP. I want the OBP hit in front of Robert at this point because he's still a batting average slugging guy who's not going to walk a ton. So, I don't know. I mean, if Tim Anderson isn't last year's Tim Anderson, should Robert be hitting leadoff? Maybe. I think six games into the season is a little early to start flipping the lap. And I understand it's a 60-game season, but baseball is still baseball. It's not, six times 2.7 games. It's still just six games, 20 at-bats, what have you.
Yeah, I guess I'm of two minds in that regard, because I always preach patience, 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 and then part of me just kind of starts to panic and say, well, screw that. Like, I don't know where you are in the Craig Kimbrell situation, where the more I look at the numbers, the more I look at the data and the performance, I would pull the plug on Craig Kimbrell, yet I know the Cubs won't.
You're talking to the guy who wasn't going to sign, signing Kimbrell was a mistake. So if Rowan Wick or Jeremy Jeffress gets the next save chance, and let it be Rowan Wick because I touted him last week, I think that's the way to go. And this is interesting because there's an organizational investment in Kimbrell, but David Ross has no investment in Kimbrell. Madden wanted the capital C closer. That's one of the reasons he got signed last year. Madden's not there anymore. I don't think Ross has a whole lot of reason to stick with Craig Kimbrell. And I made this point. Kimbrell in his first year with the Red Sox was fantastic. But the 2 years before that, you saw some decline. And since the one great year with the Red Sox, he's been in decline. I don't think there's any reason to let him take down your 60-game season. Not because – and this is different because I think we're talking about an actual change in skill set. Like Luis Robert, we don't necessarily know what he is. If he is a true talent 350 hitter, yes, he should be hitting higher in the lineup. But I can look at Craig Kimbrell and say, this isn't the guy on the cereal box. This is a completely different pitcher from the one who was on a Hall of Fame track, and you have to treat him that way.
I looked at some of the numbers from last year, small sample, but of all, there were 545 pitchers with 20 or more innings pitched. And as far as inducing soft contact, his number of 7.7% ranked 544th out of 545, and his 50% hard contact rate was 540th out of 545. And that was last year. That was, and like you say, the decline was in evidence. So he said, okay, I'll go more with my curveball. He threw 15 curveballs in his last outing and didn't induce a swing. Not one person swung at his curveball. And I will say, when you ask what is David Ross's investment, Ross was one of the guys the Cubs sent to scout him and report. They sent one longtime scout whose name I can't recall right now, and they sent David Ross. And at the press conference when he was signed, Theo Epstein specifically said David Ross reported back to us that the ball was coming out of his hand great and everything looked good. So there is that investment.
Okay, and I'll buy that as something Ross saw a little more than a year ago. But I don't think he's going to let Craig Kimbrell take down his first 60-game season as a manager, and I don't think he should. You mentioned all that hard contact. I mean, you can make a case. This is an exaggeration, but let me go with it, that Craig Kimbrell killed the Cubs season last year. You look at that series against the Cardinals. I mean, he had some bad outings. He started to look good. And then that ridiculous weekend series against the Cardinals, they lose the 4-1 games. A couple of them are in Kimbrel, and the Cubs end up, you know, missing the playoffs entirely. I don't think you can let Craig Kimbrel take down a second straight season.
Christian Yelich is finally headed home. They're not going to be able to play today, but perhaps tomorrow, depending on circumstances. And I want to say he's one for his first 25. I think among qualified players, he's last in wins above replacement right now. Do you see anything fundamentally wrong, or is this just a bad start to the season for him?
At least I don't get to stretch these muscles too often. I'm going to be the caller. That Yelich guy, he got the big money, he got the big contract, and now he's not going to hit it all. Am I doing this right?
Yeah, that's a little starter kit. I think that's pretty good.
I did the New York accent. I was trying to do a Midwest accent. But no, I mean, Yelich is going to be fine. It's one for 20. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with Christian Yelich. I think, again, I'm giving, I wrote this a couple weeks ago, I think you got to give everybody a pass this year. I mean, you got to make decisions, but, you know, Craig Kimbrel, I'm basically talking about him in the context of, you know, a three-year stretch here. Christian Yelich was, I think somebody wrote this recently, maybe the best player in baseball the last 2 years, even better than Trout. I'm not worrying about Christian Yelich. A lot of these guys are going to handle the weird, you know, spring training, then not playing for 4 months, then playing. And yeah, how do you evaluate any Philly at this point? You're playing. You're not playing. You're playing for 3 days. Now you're not playing for a week. It's going to be just a screwed-up season for just about everybody. I think we've got to give a lot of guys a pass.
And then Joe Kelly gets an 8-game rip for that? I mean, I thought that was draconian.
I thought there were two things in play. One is that Kelly has a history. I want to say he'd eaten a 6-game suspension a couple years back, known for the temper. Forget the faces and the mouthing off, but you know he does have a history. I looked at the 3-0 to Bregman, and I was trying to find a way to go, you know, this is a guy who doesn't have great command, doesn't have great control. And the more I looked at it, the more I'm comfortable with the fact that it was intentional. The one thing I was worried about is that you don't really want to walk the leadoff guy or hit the leadoff guy. So from a baseball context, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, but I'm convinced it was intentional. I'm somebody who wants this out of the game completely. I'd suspend these guys for 15, 20 games if it's intentional. This should not be a part of baseball. I don't want to hear the speech about Bob Gibson. This shouldn't be a part of the game. These guys throw 95, 96, 97 out of the hand. You can kill somebody with that. I'm sorry. We got to get this out of the game. So the fact that it's 8 games, yeah, I was surprised. I do think baseball also wants to send a message here. They don't want to do this for the next 8 weeks. They don't want guys coming up to the Astros and trying to drill Altuve and trying to drill Bregman and having to do this all the time. By suspending Kelly on the first incident for 8 games, they hopefully send that message.
I heard Chris Bryant saying this is sort of like college baseball now, where it's a high level, it's intense, but there's so few people in the stands that so much is audible. And it isn't just what we're hearing as viewers, despite some of the pumped-in phony sound. It's they're hearing everything that's said in other dugouts. And I'm wondering how that changes the dynamic a little bit, that they're trying to sort of make their own energy in these games. That's what Ian Happ was saying. And the Cubs have been doing a really good job of it, frankly, and it's been kind of infectious with a lot of I hate to use that term today, but the cutaways that they've been showing of guys enjoying themselves. But we don't think of major leaguers being too concerned about what's being said about them by opponents, but that was some juicy stuff, at least, between Dodgers and Astros.
Yeah, and this is also one of the reasons I wasn't dunking on guys for the behavior. We saw a lot of high-fiving, a lot of player interaction this weekend, and after the Marlins story broke, there was a lot of, you know, social distancing shaming coming out. But you said the key point. These guys are having to create their own energy. I mean, even if you go to a Marlins-Rays game or, you know, Detroit-Kansas City at the end of September, there's some people in the stands. There's some cheering happening. And to have to go to this environment that's completely artificial, that's completely empty, I do think that, you know, baseball's not football, where you've got to get yourself completely amped up all the time, but you need a certain energy level. These guys do feed off the crowd feedback, or even on the road, you feed off, you know, quieting a crowd. So I think that they have to do some of this, and to say that, okay, not only do you have to play in front of no crowd in this really weird environment with all these other things breaking up your routine, but now you also have to treat your teammates as if they're infectious. And I think we got to be careful about how high a standard we hold these guys to.
Another thing that Matt Trueblood said was that he was waiting for Rob Arthur to actually get enough of swings and enough data to know which ball we're using. And I guess that should be soon, right? We should be able to tell by ball flight if it's the regular season ball of last year or the playoff ball, right?
Rob actually released a piece today about the way baseball sorts for race when it assigns players to positions. I know he's been working on that. That's a great piece. It's actually free at Baseball Prospectus today. People should check that out. And I believe Rob said on Twitter the next thing he was going to be working on was the baseball. I looked at some numbers, not the StatCast, you know, drag type numbers that Rob does, but you look at the output numbers, and offense on contact is definitely down. Home runs on contact, extra base hits on contact, batting average on balls in play. So I'll be curious to see what Rob comes up with in terms of, because remember, he was the first guy last year. This stuff stabilizes very quickly. You can know a week into the season what's going on with the baseball. So I would imagine he'll work on that and have something for us next week.
Joe, continued good health, man. Thank you.
Take care, Dan.
That is Joe Sheehan of Baseball Prospectus, Sports Illustrated, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter, to which you should be subscribing if you're a conscientious and informed baseball fan. He's talking about velocity, and that is one of the subjects of the multi-part conversation that Len Casper had with Kyle Bodey of the Cincinnati Reds, the recently added Reds assistant, and he's the guy who started Driveline. He is a true baseball disruptor. He's a really important person in baseball, and Len had a two-part conversation that aired as a part of Cubs pregame over the last couple of games, and I want to give that a listen because it is absolutely fascinating conversations. Two smart baseball people talking about where we're headed as far as developing pitchers, developing pitches, creating velocity, etc. It's all really cool stuff. It's coming your way next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We've got 65 games of real sports action this weekend. Shane counted them up for us. NBA, MLB, NHL, even with that one postponed game tonight, that between now and the time I'm back talking to you, 9 o'clock on Monday morning, 65 total games are scheduled. Plus, there is golf going on as we speak. Just taking a look at the leaderboard at the FedEx St. Jude Invitational at the moment. PGA coverage on The Score is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And we have been enjoying golf. Right now, Brandon Todd is 11 under through 16 here in round two. Ricky Fowler is in the hunt. He is second at 9 under par through 9. Brooks Koepka is one behind him at 8 under. Sung Gung is at 7 under. And Byung-Hun An is at 6 under, also tied there with Chez Reavie. So that's something else to keep your eye on throughout the week. There was a time when it was only golf that's on, but now we've got playoff hockey, we've got NBA basketball, and we still have baseball as of right now, despite more positive tests that have been appearing across the league. Well, this week, Len Casper tracked down Kyle Bodie. He's the Reds' Director of Pitching Initiatives and Pitching Coordinator. And as you know, as we've talked about the book MVP Machine that Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk wrote, it really was a game-changing book about a game-changing guy. Kyle Bodie's the founder and president of Driveline Baseball. And to start, Len asked him to explain that story of why he founded Driveline and what his initial goals were.
Pretty simple, you know, the mission statement is to just be the best data-driven baseball player development company in the world, you know. And the reason that we got started was actually for rehab for pitchers. I was coaching Little League, coaching high school, and, you know, we would have kids that would get hurt, and I wanted to make sure, you know, like, hey, this doesn't happen again. I dealt with a lot of arm injuries when I was younger, and I just wanted to, like, find a better way to train some players, to rehab players. And it really started from there. It didn't start from a performance perspective. It started from how do we keep kids healthy, specifically high school kids, high school age kids, and how do we, you know, keep them on the field. So that was really the genesis of it all 10 plus years ago.
Look, the technology and the methods clearly work. The things that lead to increased velocity are borne out in the data. But I'm curious about your messaging and tone and how you've had to adapt going from working with young people, as you mentioned, to big leaguers who in some cases think they know it all.
It's been interesting, you know, because, you know, when I was interviewing with some teams, you know, one of the executives said, like, hey, you know, I'm not put off by your Twitter. I followed you for a long time, but shifted in tone over time as a result of when you're the first to break into an industry. You're going to be some sort of way, you know, the pioneers and the people that are first in, you know, tend to be that way. And that was described about two people that came before me, because I'm by far not the first, you know, unorthodox pitching trainer coming in, right? There's Tom House before me, who had a reputation, Rob Wolforth, and everyone tends to have, you know, they're like, you know, it's just, that's those guys over there. But over time, you know, with the money ball revolution and everything, the player development revolution was embraced. So it's been shifted, you know, with the pro players, you know, when you're working at Driveline, the people that seek you out, they're kind of naturally open-minded, right? They're open to suggestion, they're the ones paying you. And then now when you work inside of professional baseball, like I have for the last 7 years, you have to adapt it a little bit. You have to get some buy-in. You have to spend a lot of time on that. Doesn't mean that they're not coachable. Just means that, you know, you got to do a little more work. So that's kind of how I see it.
Your relationship with Trevor Bauer is widely known. Jed Hoyer talked recently about Anthony Rizzo's coachability that comes along with a healthy dose of stubbornness with it. Bauer can be stubborn as hell, but he's intellectually very curious. Is that an accurate description?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. You know, and Trevor and I have had a great relationship since 2013. You know, we've initially were professional. You know, I helped him out in 2013, then he started training with us. You know, we've become really good friends. And he's, you know, I think people would be shocked, you know, in day-to-day life, Trevor is a pretty normal guy. You know, he's just likes to argue about the same. And he's just a guy that he just works his ass off, you know. And so as a result of that, there's going to be some sort of stubbornness. You know, he doesn't take your answers for granted. You know, if you tell him something, he's going to want to know why. He drills down to, you know, from the very last level of understanding, which can be annoying, but it also tests, you know, your knowledge of it. And so he makes us all better, I think. And he's been a huge factor, right? Because without him and without major league players buying in, you're not going to have any success. You know, so having a guy like an Anthony Rizzo or Trevor Bauer or these other players who are willing to, you know, do something different, you're not going to have any success as a coach. So we owe them a lot of gratitude.
And anyone of us who has read the MVP Machine knows specifically some of the quirks of Trevor Bauer's very intellectual and curious personality. He's Kyle Bodie is very, very kind in his description there. Bodie's a fascinating dude. And when you talk about his importance to the game, when he says embrace the player development movement, and it's happened extremely quickly, the idea of finding velocity. When we hear about Pitch Lab, now this is all the evolution of what began in like a corrugated metal shed in an office park in outside of Seattle, Washington, and it's become an understanding of how to see pitches, how to prepare pitchers. It has stood on its ear the idea of what proper warm-up is, what proper usage is of some of these muscles, and completely reimagining and more fully understanding what the human body is capable of doing when it's coached and tuned in certain ways. The idea of finding launch angle because of technology, of where of point of contact, of spin rate, all of this has made guys who wouldn't otherwise be able to play at a certain level able to play at a certain level. So the first part of the conversation was the first game of the series in Cincinnati, and then there was part two, and Len wanted to know more from Kyle Bodhi.
Kyle, let's talk velocity. What's the highest recorded velocity on a crow hop pitch at your facility?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it is Casey Weathers, 105.9 miles per hour. I think it's possibly Bauer. They're going to roast me if they hear this because I don't know off the top of my head. I know it's one of the two. It's one of those two. And Casey Weathers, you know, the highest drafted reliever by the Rockies, you know, some 10 years ago. He is now my rehab coach with the Reds, which is kind of funny. It's all come full circle. Yeah, it's in the 105, 107 range, somewhere around there.
Are we close to the top of the human capability in terms of velocity?
Yeah, I think that the cap is we're getting there pretty quick. I've said this a couple times, and I you know, for all I know, I might be wrong, but I think we're getting to a maximum velocity that's we're going to have a tough time meaningfully going past, you know, whether it's throwing or pitching off the mound. But what I do see, and I think what you see in the game now, is that the floor has been raised, right? You don't see a lot of people throwing 89 and 88, right? You see a lot of players, more players than ever, throwing 95. And I always look back and think about when I was growing up, 37, and seeing Roger Clemens, you know, tear through the league, you know, 20 strikeout games and sitting 95. And that was the first time that I remember, and I'm young, but, you know, there were certainly pitchers before that and Bob Feller and so forth, right? But, like, he's sitting 95, striking out a ton of batters, and was like, man, that's unbelievable to watch. I remember seeing that, and it's very vivid in my mind because then today, you know, every reliever that comes out of the bullpen, pretty much you can guarantee throws 95. You know, now the top end velocity, it hasn't changed that much. You know, Aroldis Chapman obviously is the big one there, you know, throwing 100 plus. But you don't see people throwing 107, right? But you all, you know, so the average velocity has gone up significantly. And I think that's what you're going to see.
You said you scour Twitter for the next group of pitching coaches. Is it possible in, say, 10 years there could be a dozen big league pitching coaches who never threw a pitch professionally?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. You know, our coach with the Cincinnati Reds didn't throw one professionally, right? Derek Johnson, former coordinator for the Chicago Cubs. And so he's, you know, one of the first to really break through from the college ranks to that and do that. But you're absolutely going to see it. And it just depends on what jobs I think people are interested in, because, you know, someone like me, my expertise is in building systems and working with the minor leaguers and getting all that set up. So I love my job. I have had people reach out and ask if I want to be a big league pitching coach and, you know, potentially do interviews to be a big league assistant coach. It's just not my interest at this point, because I think right now, you know, we're at a point in the game where the minor league system could be really built up and do a really good job building a system. It's almost like building a company, right? It's almost like building driveline baseball, right? And then the best of the best are in the big leagues. And then that requires a different skill set, in my opinion. So I think a lot of self-taught people coming up that hadn't played professional baseball, I think they're going to find that some of the best jobs for them are in the minor leagues, you know, building that system, building that business, you know, building an organization. And my sincere hope is that we keep, you know, the talent in the game around, because I've always said this is one of my favorite things to say, is the fastest way to lose 6 hours of your life is to talk to an area scout about baseball. I mean, it's just tremendous the amount of knowledge they have. Some of the best days I have in the field, you know, when I'm there, is speaking to our special assistants like Cam Bonifay, right? Been a general manager a long time, happens to be special assistant with us, or Buddy Bell, right? And being able to speak to them and just learn about the game. And there's so much of this game's history that, you know, we can learn from them, that it's not written in any book and it's not on any broadcast. And I hope that we keep that in the game, because I think we really need it. And I think it's what the soul of baseball really is.
That's Kyle Bodie, the Reds Director of Pitching Initiatives and Pitching Coordinator, the founder and president of Driveline Baseball. Fascinating stuff in the two-part pregame interview that Len Casper conducted as part of Cubs Baseball here on The Score. When we come back, let's celebrate the return of the NBA and some star-studded games last night in a way that we weren't quite sure how it was going to come off, but it was dramatic, it was exciting, and there was LeBron, and there was Zion Williamson, and it looks like the NBA's got a good handle on what they're doing. Jason Goff is going to join us next on The Score.
For the lead, Ingram rims out, and it's over. The Utah Jazz hold on. Brandon Ingram missed it on a three-pointer that would have put the Pelicans in front. The NBA is back.
So Paul George has scored the last 8 points for the Clippers. LeBron has got 7 in the quarter, had 9 the first three quarters. Here go the Clippers, down by 2. Kawhi's got it. You see the clock. LeBron on Kawhi, down to 4. Here's George. He's way outside. A lunging 3. No. Rebound Caruso. That's it. Lakers have won.
Well, that sounds nice. That's NBA basketball on TNT. Ian Eagle and Kevin Harlan describing the actual actions of actual people bouncing an actual basketball. It was weird, but it's back. Jason Goff joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Follow him at Jason1Goff on Twitter, the pre- and post-game host covering the Chicago Bulls at NBC Sports Chicago. Hello!
What's up, dude? How you feeling?
I'm okay, because that gave me pretty much what I needed last night. You know, it felt like it kind of hit the spot, and I thought they got it, even the off-court stuff and the statements that they made, the solidarity that they showed, the production quality of it. I thought the tone was note perfect.
Yeah, no, it was a good night for the game to have it back. I didn't, you know, I've talked about this and tried to figure it out, like, amongst my friends and myself, like, how much I've missed sports or really love sports because of everything that's going on. And you realize what is important, and, you know, everybody's got their levels of importance, right? Because if you're making money off of sports, which we're in the business to do, then you should be cheering for sports to come back, but you're also looking at life. And you're also looking at what's happening around you. And in that moment last night around, like 5:45, 6 o'clock, I started to feel excited again for something that I hadn't really thought about other than just glossing over what's getting ready to happen. Is it going to happen? You finally got back into the games and just, you know, watching the pregame show with the dudes and texting Kenny that he has some toilet paper on his shoe and him responding with a picture text of it's duct tape. And then they came back shortly after that and he did the whole it's duct tape spiel. I'm like, you're lying. Like those... For those moments, you know, there was some kind of, okay, this isn't normal, but this is comfortable in the way that I am right now. So it was a lot. There was a lot happening last night. And, you know, the statements that were made. I hope that kneeling and all the other things don't get Cinco de Mayo'd. You know what I mean? Like it's incredibly comfortable for a lot of people to talk and feel a way that maybe. You know, you don't know, or you do know, because some of it's documented about how they felt previously when it wasn't so popular to do so. So there's still work to do on that front, and still got to make these companies that say they want to invest in these things, you know, hold it to them, hold them personally accountable. But last night when I saw Mike Conley getting busy, and then when I see Jordan Clarkson having the green light, like, things kind of came back into like, oh, okay, this is still happening. These guys are still some of the best athletes in the world, and it was fun to watch.
I think the way you phrased it about how we're supposed to balance our feelings in regard to this, I think it's directly proportional to how responsible each sport has been. So I guess the NBA earns more enjoyment from me because they're not playing fast and loose with public health. And it's quite the opposite. I think I'll be able to enjoy hockey because of the care with which they've gone about deciding to be in Canada, going about their testing. And the fact that the NBA, you know, we had Chris Haynes on earlier, and he was talking about one day he forgot to do his temperature and his measurements in his room, and then his wristband lit up blue, and everybody descended on him, and he had to go back to his room. You know, he describes that they're
really on top of it. So I'm going to allow myself to enjoy it more because I know how careful they're being with all of our health.
Yeah, this is kind of like our 1 hour outside, you know, in terms of like sports jail, right? Like you can actually feel the sun for a little bit. And, you know, Chris and everybody, Taylor, like you communicate with anybody that's in that bubble or on that campus. It's not a joke. Like, it's not a game. Like, dudes are being caught with their masks off walking around and being not reprimanded, but told, hey, man, you know, I don't give a damn how much money you make. Put your mask on. So the fact that the Lou Williams thing was such a big incident, right? And then we got to, like, the cultural differences and understanding and knowing, like, what happens in Atlanta and how there's, you know, there's a whole society that people really don't know about that's important to people. Like, all these things are coming to the forefront because of how careful the NBA is trying to be with this. And let's face it, I mean, something's going to happen, right? Like, something will happen. But when it happens, it's going to be a shock, not like baseball where it's like, oh, you guys didn't think that the cat's sitting at home, you know, eating DoorDash and still getting shape ups and doing all these things and maybe not social distancing, getting on a plane and having to interact with flight attendants and then go to another city. You think that there shouldn't be a contingency plan for when an outbreak happens, and it happened in the first week of the season. So, you know, basketball is trying to figure this thing out. And it, in the long run, too, Dan, like, if you want the money for whatever next year is going to be, why wouldn't you lock it down as much as possible? Like, if this is, because that's what this is. We're finding out how broke a lot of these ownership groups truly are when it comes down to it. I mean, these NBA owners, and that's why, you know, we get into this maybe next time, but a lot of decisions that aren't being made right now, like, there's a lot of dudes running around out here who have all their money tied up in businesses that thrive on social interaction. And you're asking guys to, you know, evaluate teams that aren't in the bubble, and the teams that are in the bubble are thinking about the dudes that won't be on these teams once the new salary cap gets defined. Like, there's a lot going on in sports business-wise, so I have no idea how you wouldn't, and with your best foot forward, try to make it as safe as possible so you can make as much money as possible to soften some of the financial blow that's happening around the sports world, hell, around the country, around the world.
It might be keeping Jim Boylan employed, too, which is what we were discussing with Joe Cowley yesterday. Oh, my God. every morning.
Let me ask you this. Do you, like, that $45,000 employee, the difference between him or her getting laid off might be old JB back in the saddle. We never know. Never know, man.
Well, I guess that's one way.
Don't do that. Don't do
it.
You call me to talk about LeBron. You ain't call me to talk about I'm out here talking to you. I forgot I was on the radio just now. I'm out here talking to you about other things. But yeah,
I didn't want to think about that. Believe me, I didn't. I do this to myself.
Sure you did.
I know. I do.
Yeah.
Oh, so, look, I'm also thinking, too, I heard Shaq yesterday sort of plaintively say, I'm watching the game by myself, and I'm not used to this. And we forgot that those guys, their energy and what they bring to that desk usually comes right from that room where they're watching. And they're, you know, throwing paper cups at each other and making fun of each other. And they sanitize it, and then they carry it on to TV. That's going to be hard for that show to harness the same kind of natural energy that they get from watching together.
Kenny invited me while I was down there in Atlanta to a couple of those shows, and I'll tell you, man, like the same energy and the same vibes that, because I sat back and I actually texted Matt about it when it was happening, the same energy and the same vibes that you, me, Matt, and Terry had in terms of, all right, you're in this room, I'm going to come in here, we'll get a couple of these jokes off, we're going to talk crazy, and then we're just going over there and do a show. Like, these dudes, from what I saw when I was there years ago, nothing has really changed. Like, they understand what they want to talk about. They watch the games, and we figure it out as soon as we get on this stage. And the traffic cop is one of the best to ever do it in Ernie Johnson. So there's a magic to the show that can't be duplicated or replicated without that kind of interaction. So it'll be interesting. And, you know, just getting those jokes off or seeing where a guy's day is. Like, if I know that a dude is having a bad day and I can rib him a little bit without pushing him over the edge, like, you find that out before the cameras come on. So these are the kind of things that we'll have to, you know, take into account while we try to figure out what the hell our lives look like.
Oh, hell, I don't know. I just does a little guy, like, is he ready for basketball? I mean, was he dialed in?
Dude, you know what's so crazy? Like, over the last few weeks or so, he's starting to want to know about basketball a little bit more. Like, I used to tell Nicole, like, he got no chance. Like, Jay liked to sing and dance and, you know, perform and do all these other things. I'm like, this kid is not going to like sports. And, like, over the last few weeks or so, you know what did it for him? I'm not even going to lie to you. Bulls Cavs with Daddy on the free and post. We watched a game together, and he was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then he's like, oh, you work here. I forgot that. And then he started asking me about other things. I'm like, yes, it's happening. Now, I know when Beyonce's next album come out, all that's going to be thrown away because he's going to want to sing every song. But until then, it seems like he's trying to get into basketball at a time where everybody's looking for something. So I can appreciate it, man.
These things are not mutually exclusive. And believe me, there is he can contain multitudes. That was
oh,
our rule.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's our rule with both kids. When no matter what, the answer was always yes. Like, when I remember when Jason was watching Singing in the Rain, he's like, "I want to learn how to tap dance." I said, "Okay, we'll take it to tap dancing. Here's a tap dancing lesson. Go get it done." And he was for a while, and he was like eight. He was into a Project Runway, and he's like, "I want to learn how to use a sewing machine." I'm like, "Fine, go make me a shirt." You know, yeah. And then let him, whatever. He can do whatever he wants. It's cool.
Hey, man, I tell him all the time, as long as he's respectful, as long as he listens to mommy and daddy, he can get whatever he wants. Like, the other, he's turned into a little con man, though, so I gotta watch that, because he's weaponizing the cute. The other day he told me, because, you know, I tell him, like, when we leave each other, when I gotta go work, whatever the case may be, you know, we do the whole "who's got it better than us" thing. That's from the weird Harbaugh family. But the other day he said to me, you know, I tell him all the time, he's black, he's beautiful, and he's worth it, right? And the other day during that,
I say the same to Jason.
I know you do. That's why, I mean, I got it from the Bernstein family and all your newbie and glory for sure. So I'm sitting there talking to him. I'm like, Jay, why aren't you napping? He's like, Dad, I'm black, I'm beautiful, and I'm worth it. I'm like, bro, I can't argue. All right, no nap today. But mom had to deal with it later, and I had to explain to her that I can't calm his righteousness down just for a 35, 45-minute nap. You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing out here, right?
Yeah, but that's the equivalent of the Skynet computer system becoming self-aware.
Oh, dude, it's a wrap. It's a wrap for me. It's hard for me to say no to him, even though I got to be that guy, because I don't want to make mom the bad guy, but... Yeah, he understands where my heart lies, whatever puts a smile on his face. Like, he finished an entire small red Slurpee the other day, and we had to tell mommy that, you know, it was just a piece of candy when I at least pumped 32 ounces of sugar in him. So, you know, these are the things, man. We live and we learn. Like, he's, you know, I don't think anymore are coming after him. So I told him, like, it's me and you, player. We got to figure this out. So, you know, we'll be watching Pelicans basketball at 4 p.m. on Saturday.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will. Great to hear your voice, and love to you and yours.
Y'all be good, man. One love.
That is Jason Goff, and that is how we send you into your weekend from this show, because that's the way to do it. He was among our guests today, including Joe Sheehan, Kevin Weeks, and Chris Haynes. Thanks to Shane Reardon for filling in for Jay Zawoski. Thanks to Brian Gertz for directing our video feed at Twitch. And thank you to Ray Diaz for holding it all together, as he always does. Lawrence Holmes is coming your way. And I will be back talking to you on Monday morning. We're going to have sports to talk about by then. So keep doing what you're doing. The numbers are kind of getting bad as far as what Governor Pritzker is saying. So please be safe. Please wear your mask properly. And please listen to doctors, and only listen to people who listen to doctors. Have a healthy and peaceful weekend.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.